have been waiting all week for this, and here it is. The Illegal Curve Radio Show starts now. Here comes 2 hours of hard-hitting hockey talk, and here's your host, Drew the Bear Mindell.
Love it.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live tonight at www.ustream.tv/IllegalCurve, good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. We have a jam-packed 2 hours for you coming up in about 4 minutes' time. James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail. Coming up at 7:20 tonight, Mike Doc Emrick from NBC from Versus, play-by-play voice of the New Jersey Devils. And then coming up at 8:20 tonight from MSG.com, we have Bill Hoppe joining us. We're going to start off the show talking about the reason James Myrtle is on, and that is the strange situation going on with Eric Bélanger right now.
Strangely public situation.
Strangely public. And usually, you know, exactly. Lots of times these things happen behind the scenes, nobody hears about them.
Right.
This one has become a full-blown letter-writing campaign. In case you've missed it, what's happened is Eric Bélanger claims...
Myrtle broke the story.
Exactly. Yeah. Eric Bélanger claims that he had a verbal agreement with the Washington Capitals to sign with the Caps for 1 year and $1.8 million. That deal was contingent on a trade going through that the Caps were making, but they assured him that the old deal was done. They, you know, told him to get a house, he leased a house in Washington, did all sorts of things that would indicate he really thought he was going to be a Washington Capital this coming season.
Not only did he lease a house, but the team helped him lease a house.
That's true.
Team helped him move from Minnesota. The team helped him, players suggested schools for him to enroll his children in. So essentially a done deal for significantly more money than he ended up signing.
Anyway, exactly. What has happened is the deal that Bélanger was waiting on, the trade that was supposed to, you know, finalize his free agent contract signing, never actually happened. And now, 6 weeks after the fact, where he's been, you know, turning down teams for the last 6 weeks, allegedly, or not pursuing his other options.
More so, not pursuing his other options during this kind of holding pattern that they've been in. But at the time that he agreed to it, there were apparently suitors out there looking for Eric Bélanger on a one-year deal. I can, you know, thinking about it logically, guys, the signing last week by the Habs of Jeff Halpern, well, Eric Bélanger is a better all-around player than Jeff Halpern. He can score, he can play PP, he can play PK, he's a good all-around player, he can play pretty good defensively. French player, right?
Yeah.
So doesn't that seem like...
A better signing?
Yeah, bigger guy on a smaller team. Seems like that would have made more sense. But, apparently... Maybe we can assume, just for argument's sake in this situation, we can assume that Bélanger was waiting on the Caps. They signed Halpern. Well, he's got nowhere to go now. They don't have any more money.
Yeah, the Habs weren't an option. Anyways, so long story short, Bélanger, the deal that he was waiting on never came to fruition. He signed a one-year $750,000 agreement with the Coyotes.
More than a million less than the other one, right?
Yeah, he lost $1 million in the deal, and his agent has gone public with the the negotiation tactics that the Caps were engaging in. And, you know, if you believe what the agent, wrote and then publicly gave to James Myrtle, it sounds like they all thought there was a deal in play. Now,
1.85, so more than a million.
Sorry, a little more than $1 million. Let me ask you guys before we get Myrtle on in about a minute or so, are the Caps at fault or is the agent at fault for this deal not coming to fruition and Eric Bélanger being $1 million poorer today than he was, you know, supposed to be a week ago?
You know, by letter of the law, at fault is probably the agent for making an assumption. Practically speaking, though, in the everyday world, the Caps are on the wrong for bailing on a contract that they agreed to verbally. I mean, that's how I feel about it. So, I mean, the agent unfortunately wasn't. Maybe this is a new agent too. We're going to ask James about this agent. He's a new agent, but as he to me, if you give your word, you know, offer acceptance. If you give your word, and you come to an agreement, then you should follow through on it.
And obviously, both sides are a little bit wrong here. It's tough to decide, you know, right now as the story's breaking out, who's really more at fault. But you're right. The agent assumed something was going to happen in order for his client to sign and. This is unfortunate because Bélanger really clicked with the Capitals.
Yeah,
obviously, the Capitals
were bumped
in the first round, but, I mean, you buy it, you lease a house, and then the team helps you lease the house.
Yeah.
The team helps you get settled because he was on Minnesota for the last couple of years.
Yeah. He was traded to the Caps for a second round pick at the trade deadline last year.
A good deal for Washington, I thought at the time. I still feel like it was a good deal.
And he expected, that he was going to be a Washington Capital. They made the decision. Apparently he had suitors in free agency and he agreed to stay with Washington. Now, if you read, it's interesting. And we'll talk to James Myrtle about it more so than we're going to speculate on it. It sounds like the consensus amongst the NHL, the hockey world, is that the agent is terribly at fault. You cannot use a verbal agreement as something to hang your hat on.
And you heard what I just said. Based on the letter of the law, the agent made the mistake. Practically speaking, in the real world, the team and George McPhee, based on the facts that we hear, is at fault in that respect. But at the end of the day, guys, it doesn't really matter, right?
We have James Myrtle on the line from the Globe and Mail. James, welcome to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Very well.
Good.
Thank you. James, we were just talking in studio here about we're giving the background to our listeners about this, debacle that's taken place. Can you give us a little bit more information about Eric Bélanger's agent? His name's Joe Tacopina.
Essentially, he's a really interesting story among NHL agents because he was a high-powered defense lawyer in New York. He defended some really high-profile clients. I don't know if I can name any off the top of my head, but he's been involved in lots of big cases. I think one of the cases he was involved in was one of the Michael Jackson trials. He's a very, very successful guy in terms of being a defense lawyer. He decided to get into the agent business, and specifically the hockey agent business, and one of his first ever NHL clients was Eric Bélanger. And this is a recent thing. This is the past year or two, and Eric Bélanger his agent used to be Pat Brisson, who's probably one of the most high profile NHL agents that there is. He's the agent for Sidney Crosby, but Eric Bélanger, basically was recruited by Joe Tacopina to be sort of his first NHL candidate, be like his star client at least to start. Mm-hmm. And so he signed on with Joe Tacopina.
Yeah, James, in your story today, you broke the story about Eric Bélanger and this issue with George McPhee, et cetera. And you have a quote from an anonymous agent saying, this is a cold and nasty cutthroat business. When you're dealing with the likes of George McPhee, just know the rules. Just know what the rules are and know how to deal with them. And it's interesting to me because there's another allusion by the agent about George McPhee. Can you kind of give us a good background, maybe? Is there something that maybe most of the public doesn't know? Does George McPhee kind of have maybe not so much a shady reputation but a questionable reputation behind the scenes?
Yes. it seems to me. I don't want to come on here and shovel a bunch of bad stuff on George because I really haven't had a lot of dealings with him personally. I've interviewed him once or twice. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't talk to me for this story. I've been writing about Eric Bélanger since mid August when I found out he was going to Washington, and all along George McPhee has not wanted to talk about this story. Like I said, I don't want to come on and say all these bad mm-hmm. things about the guy, but what I will say is that people I talk to and a lot of agents that I talk to do not have a lot of great things to say about George McPhee. I think that's pretty much all I want to say about that.
Okay. Is this consensus that Eric Bélanger was screwed, or do you believe that his agent, or is the consensus that his agent made a tremendous error in assuming that a verbal agreement was in place?
I'm trying to be impartial on the story a little bit. I would say that there's a little bit of fault on both sides is probably how I would weigh in, as opposed to hammering one side or the other. I don't really understand why the Capitals sort of let him on for so long and didn't sort of clarify the situation. And it's a really unique situation where a guy's told that there's this deal in place, but you have to wait for us to make another deal. I can't remember that ever happening in another situation. And I also think, in talking to other agents, they said that it was a real mistake to allow the Capitals to lead them on just because you never know what's going to happen. One agent said to me today that, what would have happened if Eric Bélanger was hit by a bus or had broken his ankle while training to get ready for the season? He doesn't have a contract signed. He's not protected. He's not guaranteed any of that money. There should have been some sort of a demand in mid-July. I know a lot of people are saying, Eric Bélanger is not that great of a player, but, he's a solid NHLer. He deserved a contract that was, I would say $1.5 million, maybe a little bit more than $1.5 mm-hmm. million. That's probably his market value. And he didn't get that because of what happened.
We talked about it a little bit before you hopped on, James, and just, put some pieces together saying, if Bélanger's agent was holding off some other offers, but because of the Washington agreement, quote-unquote, for example, like a team like Montreal maybe. I mean, they sign a guy like Jeff Halpern. To me, Belanger is a better player than Jeff Halpern, bringing many of the same attributes. Do you have any insight into which teams were vying for Belanger before he agreed, quote-unquote, to play for Washington?
No, not really off the top of my head. There were multiple teams, mm-hmm. though. You know, there were... I talked to his agent when I first wrote the story in mid-August about Washington having the deal, and you know his agent wouldn't say exactly that they had that arrangement at the time, but he did say, you know, that there are three or four teams interested, and I think that was the case. You know, I think there were multiple teams that were looking to sign him. The problem was is that, you know, a lot of teams sort of found other options. You know, Jeff Halpern, and there were quite a few centers sort of in the third line center mold that signed in August, and I think that really limited his options when he eventually signed a contract in Phoenix.
It certainly hasn't been an enjoyable situation for Belanger or his agent or even McPhee, obviously, with the story coming out, but was the biggest benefactor of everything here Don Maloney?
Well, I guess so. I mean, I don't know how much of an impact he's going to make in Phoenix. I think he's a solid player. I think he can be, you know, a good third line center, a guy who can get 35 or 40 points and be a decent player. And, you know, Phoenix needs bargains like
right,
that.
Exactly.
And you pay a veteran guy like that $750,000. I mean, that's not very far over the league minimum. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't really lose on a contract like that.
Exactly.
James, we'll leave you with this last question. Do you think that Joe Tacopina is going to be Eric Belanger's agent for much longer?
I have no idea. I don't know how strongly. I haven't talked to Eric about any of this. I don't know how strongly Eric feels about him. It's sort of a relationship that hasn't been together for that long. But, you know, definitely other agents are saying that they don't think it's going to last very long. Me, I'm not sure. But if Joe Tacopina does lose Eric Belanger, I can't name another one of his NHL clients because I don't think he has any high-profile guys. I think he has some minor league guys.
That doesn't bode well for his career as a player agent.
So far,
James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us on short notice tonight on the Illegal Curve radio show.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Take care, James.
Thank you.
You know, let's go to our first commercial break. When we come back, we're going to have Doc Emrick on. We're going to talk more about this situation. We'll deal with Kovalchuk. We got a lot going on, and it's amazing. I don't know if 2 hours is going to be enough tonight,
guys. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, let's leave it there. When we come back, Mike, Doc Emrick from NBC Sports. You're listening to the Illegal Curve radio show live on 92.9 KICK FM. It's 7:20 in the evening, and you're back on the Illegal Curve radio show. We just heard from James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail, and now we're pleased to be joined by Mike Doc Emrick from NBC Versus and MSG. Mike Emrick, welcome to the program.
Hi, good to talk to you.
Good. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no, this is fun. I wish I could tell you the last time that I was in your great city, because I sure enjoyed myself every time I came there. The first time, I know I will remember that. It was New Year's Eve in 1980, and I was there a day early for a Flyers game against the Jets. And on New Year's Eve, the Jets were playing the Washington Capitals and defeated them. And that was the first time
itself.
I ever saw Archie Henderson play hockey in the NHL.
Wow.
I'd seen him a lot in the minors, but not there. But anyway... I sure always enjoyed visiting Winnipeg.
Well, hopefully, we have.
Well,
him
exactly.
Here soon.
I think sooner rather than later you're going to be back. I hope.
Well, good.
That'd be great.
Yeah, Doc. Let's start with the punishment that the NHL handed down to the Devils. You know, the forfeiture of a first-round pick sometime in the next 4 years, the fine of $3 million, the loss of the other draft pick. Are you surprised at the severity of the punishment that the NHL handed down?
Yeah, I was. You know, it's up to them to determine punishments for things like that, but. That's a lot of cash, and more importantly, you know, millions, I guess we throw aside, mm-hmm. kind of like $100 bills to ourselves. I don't know, maybe $10 bills. But, you know, the millions are one thing, but I think the other important thing is the loss of one of the 30 best players in the draft and one of the 90 best players in the draft. That's significant.
I was going to ask you, Doc, in terms of that, you just kind of led into my next question. For the ownership, I mean, maybe not for Lou Lamoriello, because obviously those draft picks are vitally important, but for the ownership, do you think the ownership's more upset with the first-round draft pick being lost or the $3 million?
I think ownership is forward-thinking enough, Jeff Vanderbeek is, that I think he would feel the same way, that the future of the team is in its picks. Yeah, you don't treat millions lightly, but the other side of it is that that's part of your future, and so that was a significant loss.
So obviously the Kovalchuk saga has a lot to do with the CBA, and with the CBA set to expire in 2012, in your opinion, what do you think is the most important issue that the NHL and the NHLPA have to resolve, you know, moving towards negotiations for the next CBA?
Well, sitting here on September the 15th, I would have to say it's the one that we've been dealing with here lately, but there may be other issues that are going to come forward. I don't think, you know, the Olympics is going to be a sidebar story at that point. I think probably the most significant thing from the Players Association standpoint is the selection of an executive director and how that particular person will approach things when we get to that point. It's still 2 years away, but hey, you've been in this business quite a while, and I've lived through two lockouts. I hope I never have to live through another one. I'd like to live a long life, and by the same token, I'd never want to go through another one of those work stoppages. I think they hurt the sport markedly, and it took some brilliant series, at least in the States. It took some brilliant series between Detroit and Pittsburgh and another with Chicago and Philadelphia to eventually wrestle some of that interest back, but I think it is there here. And, of course, where you are, it's of interest all the time, regardless of team.
Right. Assuming that the NHLPA does go ahead and approve of Donald Fair as the hire of the new executive director, do you think just hiring him is a shot across the bow of the NHL and the owners?
Well, based on his reputation from baseball, I mean, it's very hard to draw that conclusion. It's not a hypothetical question because I think that's where it's going to go. But his reputation in baseball was that he was not a shrinking violet, and you know, we've been through a couple of these, and most recently with Bob Goodenough, who was not a guy to shrink away either.
Yeah,
but this was one that the league was not going to lose the second time.
We're joined by Mike Doc Emrick here on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. Now, Doc, we spend far too much time on this program talking about off-ice matters. As far as we're concerned, we're all hockey fans first and foremost. Let's talk about the on-ice product. You know, you're based out of the East Coast for the most part. You know, the Devils are your hometown team for play-by-play. Who do you see as the favorite coming out of the East this coming season?
And within the division, I think it'll be Pittsburgh, then Philadelphia, then New Jersey, then the Rangers, then the Islanders. But in terms of the strongest team, I think it will eventually be Pittsburgh. I know that one of their vulnerabilities is on the wing, but I still think that it's going to be that. And, you know, assuming that Detroit gets good goaltending, which they got to 37 wins worth last year with Jimmy Howard, they look really good to me. They look to be the strongest team down the middle in the league. And when you consider the wings that they have and that they didn't have because of injury last year, I like them a lot.
Doc, you get to see a lot of teams throughout the season covering hockey for obviously all those networks we mentioned before. Is there one team coming into this season that you think maybe most of the, I guess, mainstream hockey media is kind of underrating right now, and you think that they could pop up and kind of be the Phoenix of last year?
Yeah, I say that about Nashville every so often, and I still have to think that their speed and everything else they have is going to hold them in good stead. I think they're going to make the playoffs, but I don't know if they're going to be that, if they're going to be that silent team that we just, that was off our radar, because they've been sort of off the radar enough times that now they're on my radar. But no, I don't think it would be them. I'm not really sure. I should have an answer for you because we're that close to training camp. You know, the Devils open up on Saturday, and I should have thought that through, and I'm sorry that I didn't. I would be wasting your time searching my brain here at this point to come up with one. I think Washington is going to be overlooked by some people just because the expectation is they're going to be upper echelon like they were last year, and then they disappointed at playoff time. But we always have that, don't we? And seemingly in each of the conferences, we'll have at least one or two teams that will go roaring through the regular season and then stub their toe in the first round.
Having covered all of the Winter Classics for NBC, are you more excited this year about the Winter Classic coming up between Pittsburgh and Washington just because of the, you know, the star power between Sidney Crosby and the fact that those were the top two teams?
I guess there's always a reason to be thrilled about the Winter Classic, and I've had that each of those years. Unfortunately, because of laryngitis, I got to Chicago and had to leave on the 31st of December for that one at Wrigley Field. I would have dearly loved to have been there for that. But the other two matchups were thrilling, and so is this one. I guess in my mind it's a four-way tie for first so far. And I'm glad that there'll be one up in not too far from you this year, too. I think it's a terrific thing as long as we can maintain good ice surfaces in different locales. It doesn't kill me that there are two of these. And, you know, there may be a time when there'll be more than two. But right now, I've liked the idea about the one, and I like the idea about the two, as long as we can have good ice. You know, Danny Craig does a terrific job. However, the more we spread him thin, the more there is some danger of having one of those days, and the law of averages says where that we may have one of those mild rainy days one of these times, and we'll be in trouble.
Doc, you called the, you know, final between Canada and the U.S. last year one of the most exciting games people are ever going to see, and obviously the Olympics has become an issue, and it was talked about at the hockey summit about a month back, a few weeks back. You know, people are debating, especially some owners have some worries about risk, and then obviously there are some risks involved in sending hockey players to the Olympics. How do you feel about the Olympics? Do you think it's an absolute necessity to be in Sochi, Russia in 4 years, or do you think that the owners have a case and it may not be necessary if they can have the World Cup every 4 years?
Yeah, I think you made a good point with the World Cup, and I think that makes it less of an absolute necessity. Mm-hmm. You have to also understand that not only in addition to the fact that they're giving their assets away, that in some locales, not in Canada, but in some locales, they are darkening their arenas for 17 days mm-hmm. from hockey. I mean, those arenas will have basketball and other things in them, but they will not be able to show a hockey game of their team for 17 days. And when you consider that the Super Bowl would be over by that time and baseball would still be a month and a half away, these are provincial concerns that only deal with some locales in the United States. They don't really have an effect in Canada, but you could understand why some of the owners of those franchises would be not only worried but angry about giving up that much.
I want to ask you something about, you know, you call a lot of games nationally, and it's obviously quite an experience, I'm sure, for you, even today. You've done it for so long, but it's still, every game is its own entity. What's the preparation like for you and the experience in terms of calling the game when you're calling, you know, on one hand you're calling it for the Devils and you follow that team for years and years and years, you and Chico Resch, obviously mainstays in the booth, and then calling games nationally. What's the preparation like for you, and how is it different, the experience between...
It's not any less time that you spend on a Devils game than a national game, but you sure do a lot. I think the difference is the amount of time that we spend on Devils games talking about the Devils. I would say that for a regional game that involves New Jersey, we're probably talking about the Devils 70% of the time, mm-hmm. maybe 60% of the time, and 30% the other team, whereas with a national game, it'll be 50-50. That doesn't mean that we're being partial necessarily. It just means that we know that we're going to a lot of Devils fans, and so they're going to want to know if the team's not playing well, why they're not. And they're also going to want to hear more stories about Devils players than about the visitors. But the other side of the national show is that, of course, you need to be more 50-50. The preparation I do when I am able to, if it's not back-to-back games, mm-hmm. usually involves 3 or 4 hours the night before, and then, in addition to the morning skate, a couple of hours in the afternoon after the morning skate prior to the start of the game. We get handed an awful lot of material, but I guess John Davidson was probably one of my greatest teachers in this. Anybody that is a fan of hockey is a voracious reader, and there's so much that you can get on the Internet and scan any newspaper in the country that you want to and read about hockey.
That's right.
And so what you have to do is have something fresh for the fans that they haven't read about. So that's the job that we have at Morning Skates. And that challenge has been made even greater because now there are regular beat reporters who are blogging during the afternoon, and a lot of the material that we would gather that might be exclusively ours in the old days is not anymore. And you know what? That's okay, too, because we all need to be driven to provide better information. But that's the challenge of game day now, is not only having something that's fresh for even people who have read the blogs in the afternoon, but also to have your usual routine things down. I like to gather kind of oddball things that have happened on this day in history. You know, a bus that took 30 hours to get to a game and the game was canceled because of snow or something like that. I like to have those ready in case we need them. I like to do the birthdays, not just of current players, but also those that might be out there watching the game that think they're forgotten about, but they're 62 years old today. I think those are things that are fun for me to dredge up and hopefully are interesting for young and old fans alike.
Doc, just having you on the show is making our phone lines light up, and we just took a call from a listener, and he wanted to know, you know, what are your thoughts regarding the Sabres' chances of making the playoffs this year, and really their long-term, their success in the season this year?
Well, I think that, you know, the good thing about Buffalo is that they have never lost the whole idea about the fact that this is a game that you win with defense, and I think they, you know, the season was tremendous. They had a great step forward. They got 100 points. But they had a step backward in the playoffs. And the stability that they've had with Lindy Ruff there and Darcy Regier over a period of time, I think that's made a great deal of difference in the fact that you know pretty well predictably what's going to happen. Not having Ludman this year, not having Tillinder, that's going to hurt. You know, they've gotten Rob Niedermeyer there to help out defensively, and the additions that they've made have been largely defensive ones. So defense tends to win. Goaltending is terrific in Buffalo, and I like their chances to be in the top eight for that reason.
Now, Doc, some people might not know this, but you were the founder and editor of the NHL pronunciation guide for 23 years, and I believe you're still a board member of that publication?
Yeah, well, you know, it sounds a lot fancier than it is.
Okay.
What happened was I was at a meeting with Chuck Caton, the Carolina Hurricanes guy, and I talked to Chuck, and he's the president of the association. I'm vice president. And I said, you know what? Every time we go into an arena, we have to get the announcer aside and have him go read the names to us so that we make sure we say them right. What about doing that in September? And we posed it to Dick Irvin, who was our executive director, and he said, that's fine. Mike, you do it. So for over 25 years I did. During the lockout, all kinds of electronic things had come along, and there'd been a great deal of progress rather than me having people leave it on my voicemail and listening to them over and over again and making sure that I translated them phonetically. They got the guys at training camp, the PR guys, to record the player saying his name himself. Then those are now sent to Toronto and are translated phonetically as I used to do in the old days. So I'm out of it now, and it was something that I was fine relinquishing to the league, but for a period of, I guess about a quarter century, I was the guy. But it wasn't a department. It was basically Dick Irvin saying, you do it.
We wanted to ask you quickly, what would have been some of your favorite names to pronounce over the years, if you can give us a few?
Sergei Krivokrasov one. And the three Stastnys. Now, the reason the three Stastnys were a challenge was that, you know, it was television, I realized, but we needed to delineate the three guys, and they were on the power play together. And they weren't sluggish or anything. They'd move the puck around so quickly that finally I eventually just dropped the last names and gave the first names, trusting that people would know. I ran into a couple of names. Boy, I can't remember. I usually have them written down, but I did water polo at the Athens Olympics in 2004, and because it was in Athens, the Greeks were allowed a team in both men's and women's water polo, and there were two guys, I think their names first and last had something like 13 syllables, and they were both in the pool together at the same time. So I was not giving first names as often I don't, and there was no reason to get them in because I don't think a lot of people in North America followed water polo well enough to know that those guys were in or they weren't. But I guess that Krivokrasov was one of the longer ones, and there was Nikolai Hobby-Bulin when he first came over had a different pronunciation, as did Teemu Selänne when he was in Winnipeg. And that got changed after his first year because so many people were saying Solani eventually agreed to it. There are those things that we get faked out about from year to year because a guy will say, you know, they usually say, I don't care. And then we try to say to them, look, your parents care, and I would say your family would care. Why don't you care? We want this to be right. We want to say it right. So long-winded answer. But those are some of them that have been challenges. It usually is a matter of speed more than anything else, and the Stastnys gave me my I had my hands full when they were playing.
Well, Doc, as you know, I'm a huge Devils fan, and I watch you and Chico every year about 50 times a year, and I was really happy when you guys clarified that the difference between Parise and Parise and what he actually went by. So,
yeah. You know that, I don't know how much time you have for a story about that.
Go ahead.
I was walking in the Meadowlands one night in Zach's rookie year, and Chico was saying Parise, I was saying Parise, because that's what we'd learned, and I said, J.P., you tell me how you want this said. And so that's what he told me, and I shifted gears in the middle of the game. And I said, this is how this guy wants his name said. And so that's how it's going to be, and we've been doing it ever since. Now, not everyone does. Some of the guys are creatures of habit, and they shift to that. But Parise is how he wants it. And whenever I'm in Montreal, I hear the public address announcer say it exactly that way. So I know I'm not too far off.
That's great.
I hope I can pronounce this correctly. Mike Doc Emmerich, thanks very much for joining us tonight on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. This has been a ton of fun for us.
I sure hope I see you guys in person sometime.
Here's hoping.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Doc. Take care.
So long.
Bye-bye. Let's go to break. We'll come back.
Well, that was the highlight of my my career right there.
You're happy now.
I've probably watched at least Richie Rose, at least 1,000 games that Doc Emmerich has called for the Devils. So, I mean, for me, that's it.
You've watched more than
he's
that.
He's the man for me.
The Devils, and the Fox, and NBC, and the Versus. I mean,
he's the voice of hockey. I mean, as much as we grow up on Bob Cole, anybody who's a hockey fan in the U.S. has grown up on Doc
Emmerich. Bob Cole's the Canadian voice. Emmerich is the American voice, for sure.
Let's go to break.
Okay, let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to talk about all the signings in the NHL. Like I said, it's a busy day. Stay with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. What is this? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. Denise is no
that's
longer
our second. That's our second Magnum KI song.
Did we have a first Magnum KI song?
Right before the Doc Emmerich song, we got a Magnum KI track in there.
You're not allowed to pick the music anymore, Ezra.
Well, those are my boys.
What are you talking about?
We're going to play Magnum KI all night.
It's a hockey show. It's not a jazz show.
It's not jazz. It's hip-hop.
That was hip-hop? Sounded very jazzy to me. I mean,
were you going to say we're not going to play music anymore? Are we just going to come into the break silently?
Well, when I opt the show, we usually end up having cold intros because I screw up the music, so we might as well go back to that. Anyways, welcome back. So far in the first 40 minutes that we've been on air, you've heard from James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail, and we just heard from Doc Emmerich of NBC Sports versus MSG. You name it, the voice of hockey in the United States of America.
Boys, we are back. We just had two great back-to-back interviews.
Where did we go?
For about 3 weeks. Well, I mean, we're getting
close to the regular season.
We're getting close. We're getting back to the serious big time guests and bringing you the topics because
Ezzy is pumped tonight, folks. I don't know if you can hear it in his voice, but Ezzy is pumped right now.
Richie hooked this up right now. We might as well say this now. I'm going to that game on Wednesday between the
next
Hawks
Wednesday.
And
yeah, next well, Wednesday.
I'm bringing it.
Next Wednesday, Ezzy will not be in studio with us. He'll be live on location from the MTS Center where he will be compiling some interviews to be broadcast on the show. I guess that's the beginning of October.
And letting you guys
that's
know
probably
what,
the season preview
better,
show. Is that not
September 29th show, which is our fantasy show? Actually,
okay, September 29th. So we'll be getting some interviews that Ezzy's going to compile. We know Ezzy's our roving reporter, of course.
We talked about it last week. Next week we're going to have Ezzy live on location from the game. We're going to be working on some guests there that I have in mind. September 29th. We are doing our fantasy preview show, 2 hours prepping you for your draft. It's going to be a must-listen to before your pool. We're going to have Gus Caseros, who is an editor and writer at McKean's Magazine, which the magazine was sent to me and looks terrific. We're going to work on getting somebody from Puck Prospectus. We're going to break down everything, as I talked about last week.
We already have somebody from Puck Prospectus.
Is Corey coming on?
And the
is Corey
going to
come
the week
on
after,
or?
We're talking prospects. We're going to get somebody on to talk about the NHL players. And then the week after is our three-hour NHL preview.
That's right.
So we go through every single division. We go through every single team. We talk about predictions. We talk about every single thing you want to hear about the teams. It's going to be another, I think, must-listen-to show, although I hope every show is a must-listen-to show.
I listen to every show, so everybody else must also. Anyways, let's talk about some of the signings in the NHL because there's been a whole ton of them. Let's start in Anaheim. We've been talking about it for the last few weeks. Bobby Ryan finally got done. 5 years, $25.5 million, an average annual cap hit of $5.1 million. I'll throw it open. Richie, your thoughts. Ezzy, your thoughts. And, of course, we'll take some calls on this. 780-KICK, 780-5425, if you have an opinion or about anything you've heard so far, any of the signings that happened.
Let me go on this, Drew. Last week we talked about it, and it was a report from Larry Brooks that it was 5.5 per year for 5 years, so 27.5 a year.
Right. Good
total,
math.
Sorry. And Ezzy and I talked about it last week, saying, and my point was, you know, it sounds like a close number, but there's no way that this team is going to give a 5-year deal or any long-term deal to Bobby Ryan at more money than Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff. That's what happened. He signed at 5.1, they're at 5.3. It's a minimal difference, but the difference is there, right? You can't go above the top player.
Right.
Getzlaff's the best player.
It's an immediate slight to your best players.
It's a whole Lidstrom rule. And Bob Murray did a very good job of kind of a self-imposed cap on the negotiations. Ryan's not going to push for more money than those guys. Those are his buddies. He's not going to push for more money. Good contract. Bobby Ryan is going to be an NHL, a 40-goal scorer in the National Hockey League for many years to come, I think, 35-plus at least. And so this contract's going to – they're not gonna, certainly not overpaying. I think it's fair market value. They might even get some value out of it. But the reason they will is because how they structured their own cap.
Richie, I agree with you that $5 million for him is about right. He's 23, the same age as Crosby, same year, drafted after Crosby.
Right, yep.
I was a little surprised, and even though we knew last week what the terms of the deal were going to be, it wasn't confirmed, but we knew it was 5 years and $25.5 million. But I thought it was interesting though that they gave him 5 years, because if I'm not mistaken, Getzlaff and Perry also got 5 years, right?
Five or six years, they're all,
that was another big thing the Ducks were hoping to avoid, is having them all come up for free agency the same year, which they managed to do.
And you know, There was a little bit of speculation amongst us that, you know, he might only get 3 years and it might be a little bit less, even less than $5 million. Maybe not 3, but 4 years. And 4 years is something like, you know, $16 million. But they're setting themselves up to not have major contract issues with their forwards, at least. I mean, if you think about it, they're not in a position right now where they can not sign him for 5 years, whereas other teams maybe aren't so much. But Anaheim is very much a one-line team, okay? I mean, Joffrey Lupul's got injury problems. Saku Koivu's not coming back.
He's back.
Or is he?
He's back, but he's not. I mean, he's not. You can't rely on him.
I think
Koivu not injured?
I think they're a top-heavy team, is he? Koivu's back.
They're a top-heavy team with a very weak defense, is what they are.
Yeah. Right. Paul Mara.
But even with that line, even with the Koivu, Solani, Lupul line, you've got a lot of question marks there.
Lupul's a big question mark in himself.
And that team,
Jason Blake can squeeze in there.
That team is very much a one-line team. But the good news for Ducks fans is it's the best line in hockey.
Yeah. Those two together, in my opinion,
probably the best line
in hockey. Probably
the best line
together. Yeah, it's probably the best line in hockey. All healthy. Getzlaff wasn't healthy last year.
Right. So, health is always the asterisk amongst any conversation.
Especially
but
power players.
Exactly.
Those are all, to be honest, those are really three power forwards.
Yeah. Nobody wants to match up against that line. Everybody remembers what they did against San Jose and Detroit 2 years ago when they were all healthy.
And
it was just dominant.
We're a couple of weeks away from our season preview show, but I've said this before, and I just don't see the Ducks missing the playoffs again this year.
Interesting.
It won't happen again this year.
Well, we'll do predictions. We'll do predictions before the season starts, undoubtedly.
Next contract, yeah.
Yeah, 780-KICK, 780-5425, of course, area code 204 in front of that. Send us a message on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. You can talk to Remus in the art desk at ustream.tv/IllegalCurve.
I got us on Facebook. I want to post a message there. I'm on there right now.
Richie's on the Facebook, so you can find us there, IllegalCurve.com on Facebook. Mark Stahl has re-signed with the New York Rangers. 5 years, $19.875 million. Average annual cap hit of $3.975 million.
Did that just come in today?
Yeah.
It came in, late this morning.
Yeah. Somebody broke... people have been joking that Glenn Sather's been asleep at the wheel, but Glenn Sather woke up and hit a home run here. This is a bargain.
You said that earlier. Tell our listeners why you think that's a home run.
Compared to Wade Redden, Richie.
I'll tell you why, because Mark Stahl is the best defenseman on the hockey team.
Yep.
He's going to be...
Stahl and Dil Zotto are both.
That's right. He's going to be on the Olympic team in 2014. I'm telling you right now.
Go to Sochi, either that or the World Cup team.
Quick skill set thing. Stahl's a good skater. He's got great awareness, terrific awareness, great hockey sense. Gets a stick in the lane, blocks shots. He's one of those guys kind of plays Lidstrom-esque. Doesn't have to be too physical. He's not afraid to play physical. But he gets in the lanes. He's always in the right place. He's a smart defenseman. He is, to me, their most valuable player, aside from Henrik Lundqvist, maybe as valuable as Marian Gaborik. This guy is going to be a future All-Star for many years. He's going to get paid less than $4 million. Now, think about this, guys. I realize that guys like Paul Martin, right? Paul Martin, Zdeněk Mihajlík, all those guys signed for deals more than he's making. I realize he's on the second wing of an entry-level deal, and those guys are a little bit older.
Stahl's only 21 years old.
Right. But you're getting a lot of value here.
This is an interesting contract in the nature in which it's structured. I mean, the AAV,
for the Rangers.
The annual hit is, like we said, is just under $4 million a year. But in his last year of the contract, I think he is making in that year over $5 million. So this is just an example of how you can structure a contract to make it cap friendly, yeah, and the player's happy about it because $5 million for a guy like that in the last year of a 5-year deal
is
fair market value.
Wouldn't be shocked to see him develop a little bit of an offensive game too, guys. We're talking about a guy who's going to be an all-star, is a top defenseman on a National Hockey League team. To me, Glenn Sather really did well here. I'm actually very surprised that Mark Stahl's agent took this contract, because I think that they needed him almost basically more than he needed them, and I think that he could have held out for it. 4.5, 4.75, maybe even 5, but I think 4.75 would have been a little bit more of a number that I probably would have shot for. I'm very surprised, and very surprised that he locked in for this long. Guys, he's only going to get better. As he said, he's young.
And Richie, as far as the RFAs go, this is clearly the best deal. I mean, the Rangers. I just mentioned that the Redden contract is up there, but I mean he's stuck there. But as far as where he's at in his career, and I mean
I bet
there you wouldn't find an NHL general manager right now who wouldn't want to be in a position where they could sign their third-year guy coming off the entry-level contract to lock them up to 5 years instead of being in a position where possibly he becomes an RFA after a couple of years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Mark Stahl and Delzato, those are the futures of the future
that's
guys
right.
on the defense for the Rangers, and they're not actually looking that bad. The Rangers,
the defense is good. They got Saginetti coming.
The defense is really good.
They Ryan McDonough from Montreal.
They have to get some consistency from night to night because, going back to the Drury and Gomez acquisitions and all that, and the Gaborik coming in there last year, I mean, they were nothing about their team last year was a playoff team.
They're a weak team at the middle, Ezzy.
Right.
Weak team at the middle in a day and age where you need that strength.
Yeah, maybe Eric Boulanger would have looked good there.
We would have helped. I mean, they added Todd White, too. Yeah, much ado about it.
Speaking of previews, predictions and all that, another team, the Rangers, I don't see them missing the playoffs.
They're an interesting one. I think you can go both ways on that. We'll save it for the preview show.
Not again this year. I just don't see it.
That's our favorite line off the air. Save it for the show.
Cogliano.
Save it for the show. Andrew Cogliano. Finally, 1 year, $1 million.
Why wouldn't you sign him to more than 1 year?
Well,
why is he only signed to 1 year?
Are questions, Ezzy, about where this organization sees him moving
right.
forward.
Yeah. I think they see him moving forward on a different team.
Well, let's be honest. Everybody's Cogliano and Gagne, both guys who were key parts of 2 years ago's team.
I get your point, though, because after this season, I think he's going to be getting a heck of a lot more than $1 million. So if you could get him at one, maybe you could get him at 2 years at like
don't seem interested in having him around, though.
2. What?
They don't seem interested in keeping him. They don't seem to like this guy.
Now, they don't seem to love his game, but there are quotes, and now quotes are just quotes, and it doesn't mean action, but that he's going to try and change his game to be that speedy forward who can cause havoc, play really good defense, kill penalties, and that kind of role, as opposed to trying to be the scorer. Because Andrew Cogliano, for all his intentions to be a scorer, doesn't have the hands to be a scorer.
Gagne is more of the scorer of those
absolutely,
two.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I think if he takes on a different role and can add in some offense, he could be a very valuable commodity. So this, he could. I think it's a very, very, very high chance he outperforms this contract.
Richie,
the problem is it's a one-year deal. So.
You know, I just want to quickly say this, Drew. You know, you hear a lot of guys that are given too much responsibility. This is a perfect example. Cogliano, I'm talking about, was given way too much responsibility. Same thing with Gagne. Gagne popped in 40 points in his rookie year, and that was all good. And then all of a sudden, along with Hemsky and Horkoff, that was their offense. And I think Cogliano, you can't expect Cogliano. I don't think he ever put up numbers in junior even to carry a team.
McTavish did a pretty good job of sheltering them, but as a necessity, they put him into too many pressure roles because they didn't have better players.
Cogliano screams at me as the kind of guy who's going to leave Edmonton and going to turn into a top NHL, maybe not a top NHL forward, but a top six NHL forward, and the Oilers are going to look back and regret every minute that they've spoken ill about this kind of guy. He's going to find his niche somewhere in the NHL. It's not going
to
be Edmonton.
I think he has the ability to do so, and right now, if you sold him, you'd be selling so low that it wouldn't even be worth your while.
I see him blossoming somewhere outside of Edmonton. I think there's been a lot of poison in the water there already.
He could blossom there.
Moving on, Peter Mueller.
Are you hinting at Soure there?
No. I want to get into it, but it's the next segment.
Poison
seems like a good word for Soure.
That's good. Peter Mueller re-signed with the Colorado Avalanche. He was acquired at the trade deadline. 2 years, $4 million, average annual cap hit, $2 million.
It seems like a really good deal for the Avalanche as well.
I generally tend to agree with you, except for Peter Mueller's been an odd case. Came to Phoenix with a lot of expectations coming out of the WHL. Had a pretty, not bad. He turned some heads. And then the next season he came in, he put on a lot of mass, a lot of muscle, and slowed him down, and he lost confidence. And then last year he was obviously shaky to the point where they traded him, and then
put up huge numbers.
Played well for Colorado down the stretch.
Yep. Yeah, they traded him, though, for Wojciechowski, and Wolski's was better than him.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, that was a case of both teams were sick of both players.
Well, and Wolski, they want to cut costs, actually, in Colorado there. But Mueller has the talent. He's very good hands. He has a scoring ability to be a productive top six forward. There are questions about his makeup, though. And the 2 years, $4 million, I think, is safe for both sides. It gives Mueller a little bit of security for 2 years. And the Avalanche get to see what they have here. I'm not sold on Mueller yet. There's a possibility of him being very good, but there's also a possibility of him not being great. I thought this contract was fairly reasonable for both sides. I think the next contract we're going to talk about, though, was crazy value for Phoenix.
That's a very good segue. Well done. Martin Hanzel re-signed with the Phoenix Coyotes. 2 years, $3.6 million, average annual cap hit of $1.8 million.
Richie, is this not a guy who... Was it 2 years ago when he broke in? 2 years ago, or 3 years ago?
I think it's 3 years ago.
I think he was drafted in 06.
Right,
Mueller and Hanzel were back to back. I think it was Hanzel first, then Mueller, or vice versa. But was this not a guy that Gretzky was the highest on?
Yeah,
Gretzky was very high on Hanzel when he first broke in, and then he get sent down halfway through the season. He played almost a full season, I believe, in his second year.
No, he's played three full seasons.
Three full seasons. Okay, so it was 3 years ago. When Gretzky was very high on him, got lots of ice time, and Hanzel, he was a very high draft pick. I think he was a top 15 draft pick, top 20, top 20 draft pick. But he was considered a steal, and definitely this is a deal for under $2 million.
Wow, yeah.
When you consider a lot, there are a lot of guys out there, a lot of muckers. I mean, I'm a huge John Madden fan, but at 37 years old, he's still picking up $2
million. Is that what he got?
I think he was getting $2 or $3 million on Chicago. I'm not sure. He might have only got one on Minnesota. But
they sign him anyway.
Point being, $2 million.
They don't actually want to score any goals this year, and they want to give up no goals also.
But he's a key piece of that team. The Phoenix Coyotes, forwards, Hanzel. You've got Lee Stempniak, you've got Volsky. It's a young team. These are the key pieces, and you're not paying anyone that much money. You've got O'Coin and Jovanovski who make, relatively a lot on defense, but up front, you're getting... This is going to be a team that'll be at the salary floor.
Yeah, they're not spending much money on the team. I'm just checking on John Madden, because I like to be accurate.
He might have
John
only
Madden's
got $1 million.
John Madden's getting 1.25 this year.
1.25, and I think he got a little bit more in Chicago, but the point is that...
Team that's not going,
I mean, you're getting one of the up-and-coming... I'm not going to say Hanzel will be a superstar.
About Hanzel, he's big, he's strong, he's hard to move off the puck, he plays against the other team's best players, he's good both ways. I mean, I know he's got 35, 31, 33 points in three consecutive years. The guy's playing against the other team's top players. He is a positive player. This guy is worth more than 1.8 a year. Don Maloney does a terrific job here of getting value for the player. People are going to be wondering why Hanzel's so underpaid when in a year and a half he's up for the Selke.
Really?
Yeah.
Somebody remember that a year and a half from now, Richard's prediction.
And with Hanzel and Boulanger, that's a pretty good day for the Coyotes.
Yeah, I agree.
Don Maloney is doing a fabulous job with no budget whatsoever. I think I was reading something, they've sold 4,000 season tickets
and one quarter
of the luxury boxes. And for this guy to consistently be putting out, I mean, they should be able to do what they did last year, or at least be top six.
Not do what they did last year, Drew. There's certainly going to be a little bit of a fallback, but I think that they have the ability to obviously be competitive in a difficult division.
Okay, let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to talk about NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM.